machine out there, but this is what was determined during the overflights as the machines that that they found out there. One of our concerns is that we get additional treatment back in the Smith Island areas, back in the Seal Island areas, and back into Sleepy Bay down at Latouche. We're concerned that winter storms may come out, and if we get sheening coming off these islands, whichever way the wind's blowing or whichever way the storm's coming in, we can not only contaminate the areas that have been treated over on Knight Island, but if it blows north, it can get Naked Island, or if we did have a storm from the northeast, it could blow it over towards Montague and Hinchinbrook Islands. And we are concerned with that. And so certainly encourage Exxon, and we certainly hope with the additional task forces that you can get back in these areas and also treat them again this year.
Is that, are they reporting sheens? Are they reporting any moose, or is it just a sheen? A light sheen would not do any damage over there to speak of. I'm not so concerned about the light sheens, but are you seeing moose?
There is some gray and there are some dark brown sheens out there.
Because those are the ones we really have to get on. I saw one the other day. They went out and the only thing they could capture was that one thin line of moose, but those are the ones we have to capture and watch. I guess my point is I don't want to falsely alert everybody on the east side of Prince William Sound that the oil is coming. I don't think that's an overstatement.
Well, we'll have to watch and just see how much oil has moved out. We didn't have any high tides, and we don't have the agitation of the beaches at this time of year, and it's something that we just don't know what's going to happen. We'll have to see what happens during the winter, and it's important, as you mentioned, the aerial overflights, keep track of where those machines are.
Absolutely.
It's very important. We did, our crew from Homer flew up into the Latouche Passage area this last week and did see a approximately 4 mile long sheen down there, and did have some moose in the area, did have some moose in the sheen down there. And the concerns of the Seward and the other areas are that that we get as much oil as we can out of Prince William Sound this year in order to avoid any of the storms that are going to go down. They're going to, at least historically, the oil has tracked down through this area and gone over into the Seward area, so we may get rid of some oil in Prince William Sound, but they may have to contend with it later.
Yeah, and I think that our meetings today with talking about beach cleaning agents, I think that's why those are so important. We've got to get as much oil out of there as we can.
Yeah, I got a couple comments. Almost all of the areas mentioned are those where witness time were honored as recommended by the shoreline. You pointed that out, but let me point it out again that every area you've marked, we've demobilized because of deficiency kind of that area or other concerns in terms of witness time that are available to treat up to this time. And your summary statement here is the request is not to chase sheens around the sound, but more adequately treat the most seriously contaminated islands. Of course, that's our desire too. And if your desire is more adequate treatment, I would suggest to you that the most important thing your agency can do is to expedite the approval of surfactants and bioremediation and carefully examine your request for additional testing and data to see if that's really required, especially considering the amount of time like this year.
But we're reviewing the request for the use of the beach cleaner and so on, but they're, I think we've tried to condense the review process in as short as time as possible. Well, that's something that's out of my bounds. That's something Steve will get addressed later on. If I may continue. In the Gulf of Alaska, the treatment operations there have generally been the type A with the manual pickup of oily debris and moose. And this seems to be effective in removing the surficial oiling out there. And as you indicated on your plan tonight, you'll be starting some type B treatment out in those areas. And we're glad to see that in order to get this process going. The areas out there do not have near the degree of oiling we do in Prince William Sound, but there are some pockets of oiling out there. And we feel we do need to get some hot water on there and get that oil removed as as quick as possible, so we welcome your efforts in that.
Yes, and we have Type B treatment underway at all three areas now. As Steve pointed out before, sometimes we have different points of view on the situation. I guess my own point of view is, let's take Yali Glacier Beach as an example. I believe Admiral Robbins, you and I visited that area in early May, and we were concerned by the effectiveness of the Type A treatment that was being conducted in the area at the time. But it was the only methodology left after taking into account all the other methodologies that had been eliminated by the various committees involved. At that time, you recommended a Type B treatment. There was further discussion at the MAC with concern on your recommendation. And as a result, little else was done except for additional Type A treatment at that meeting. To try to resolve that, I think about 3 weeks ago, John, you and Jackie and Ed Owens went there again. Met with all the local agencies, developed a recommendation for Type B treatment at Yali Glacier Beach. I understand on the latest discussion that the recommendation for harrowing of the soil there to break up the asphalt was brought up as a concern as a treatment method, is whether or not that might spread additional oil and damage to the beach during the winter. So again, that was rejected. The last thing I'm seeing is it's under consideration as a treatment area for bioremediation, which I also believe would be effective in that area. But it's that situation that I have not reduced the number of people in the sewer area. Yet the options left available to me, because of continuing discussion but not agreement on treatment methods, have at times reduced them to ineffective methods, which discourages all of us. I think we should not intend to do that anymore. We need to decide on the program and move along with it. I'll charge my own people, the Coast Guard and affected agencies, to make the best use of those people. And with the number of people there, I am convinced that we can finish all of those areas of home or sewer earlier than September 15th.
And I don't argue with you.
Things yes. seem to have a way of changing, don't they?
Yes.
If I might finish that, I believe it's important not only look at the removal of surface contamination, also the subsurface contamination. We've been working with Bob and discussing the different R&D methods that possibly could be used out in the field. And so, you know, if we had some process in order to treat the shoreline sediments, we'd sure be open to any suggestion that you had on that. To some mechanical method or some other methods to go ahead and use to treat those sediments. I'm sure listen up to them and see what we can try and get going out in the field.
Regarding the testing out the FERX at 8590, I can't remember the number. We're being asked to approve or use something that we haven't seen any data on, and we are looking at a very abbreviated testing protocol to give us information that we feel will minimally allow us to make a decision. And I think that we've abbreviated that down to possibly from the time that the test would start, approximately 2 weeks until a field interim permit could be given to start a broader scale application if the testing proves successful. So I, considering that we haven't received any information, I don't really feel that we are should be categorized made to be people to believe that we are holding this up. I think we're doing everything we can to try and assist in getting this information out, but we do feel an obligation to our resources and to the people of Alaska to make sure that it's something that a decision we're not going to regret. Also, I guess I really echo the Admiral's comments regarding winter activities out here, and we are planning to conduct oversights We have, in talking with pilots, there's a lot of weather, good flying weather in the Sound in the wintertime, and probably some of the best flying weather. There's lots of times when you can't fly, but in between those, we plan to take advantage of it. And we would really like to see a strike capability to deal with threats to any of the sensitive resources out here during the winter months, anyway. And we would really like to pursue, discussions along those lines. One thought that has come to mind is that we did have some plans come in for a 40-man camp at Chenega, a land-based camp. You know, it doesn't seem unreasonable to think that some sort of a team could be placed there that could operate out of there, because there is, you can boat in the Sound for periods of time, and if there is a threat to that area down there, and that's one of the areas where there's a significant sensitive area around there with the hatchery, and that seems to be right on the path of a lot of the oil that comes down through that area. So, we are looking at some sort of a commitment, I guess, to be able to deal with these situations that arise.
First of all, we sent the toxicity data to the EPA today, and also to Dennis Belso on 95-8. Laboratory work was just completed this week. The data's out. We should get a response from the EPA tomorrow whether or not it's on the NCP list. I think the issue on dispersants goes back to May, not just on the 95-80, but on the entire process and the amount of time and energy that's gone into developing testing protocols, doing laboratory tests, and supporting field tests. We think the entire effort has been overdone from the beginning. And what we're seeing is the tail end of the effort, and we made no progress with 2 months of tremendous effort on the part of all the people involved. We seem to rehash the same old problems every time we talk about a new chemical. The chemicals themselves are not toxic for the most part. I mean, dispersants are generally known as to be non-toxic. The real issue is hydrocarbon in the water column. And so far, there's been no evidence to indicate that it's a serious threat. Now, we don't want to do anything to damage the environment any more than anyone else does. But on the other hand, we think we have to be reasonable, and that's where I think we have a difference of opinion on what's reasonable and what a no-risk test is. And you can't do a no-risk test in an environment like Prince William Sound, the Gulf of Alaska, or any open water. This is not a laboratory. And I think that's where we stand. We're considering the material that you handed out at the RRT today, and we'll make a response.
I too find the methods that we have frustrating. I think that we're doing damage to the shoreline by the hot water treatment. I think it's the only thing we have available to us, and I would urge that we move these the tests along as quickly as possible, and if they can be used at a low risk, we ought to be doing it, and we ought to be doing it fast, or we're going to have the same problem throughout the winter we've had through the summer, chasing oil. And we've got to get real about it. There is no such thing as a no-risk decision, and we've got to move ahead with it, or we're not going to get done. Next. Comments?
Anybody dare?
Anybody dare to say anything? If my frustration is showing through, I'm sorry.
You make a little point, though. Two dispersants or beach cleaners that weren't even tested and failed. You can't say that there hasn't been an attempt made to try to control it.
Well, and that's true. They have been tested, but the weeks and weeks it takes to test them and find out that it doesn't work is what's frustrating. Meanwhile, the weeks are going by very quickly, and we only have about 2 months left. That's what's frustrating. We still haven't found anything that works. Maybe there's nothing that works. But the last one we tried shows promise, and I'm hoping that that will move ahead quickly. And that's what we were working on all day today. And that and bioremediation are two things that we've got to move ahead with alacrity if we're going to get anything close to having a reasonable hope of using them before the end of the season. Coast Guard.
The first page of our summary is dutifully labeled summary, and it's looking at statistical progress in both the Sound and in the Western Alaska area, then the spill overall. I should point out that in our tracking system, we are tracking by completed segments only. Okay, so if there's an increment of a segment and an adjacent increment of another segment, that would not show in our system. Until the entire segment is complete and signed off, it does not show in these figures. I did have a question in the summary sheet. Would a list from us of the segments signed off in the immediately preceding week be of value to any of you or a significant percentage of you? I think we get them individually. Any need for a cumulative list? The second page is just a quick overview of the resources of the federal government, particularly the DOD and the Coast Guard, that remain in the operating area. Our issues page, as I would hope would work out, is a blend.
Jay, let me, while I'm thinking of it, one of the things that I get questioned on and I would like to see in the future is a list, if it's possible, of all federal resources that are dedicated to this bill. I think that'd be a useful thing to have on this.
Certainly, we have that. There's several radios, several types of field equipment that go on beyond this list that's on this page.
But I want both personnel and...
Sure.
Because there's a lot of federal personnel here, and I'd like to add it to the list. I just forgot to tell you.
Sure. The issues page, as I would hope would work out, is a blend of the areas of concern of both Exxon and ADEC, and then some unique to our own operations. The Mount Vernon, which has been one of the two Navy ships that have been operating throughout the summer, has been released, and we've gone down to one Navy ship. Plans in the near future are to replace it with a berthing barge also. Coast Guard Cutter Active is being relieved. Coast Guard Cutter Resolute is taking her place. She'll be operating in the Sound starting tomorrow morning. I bring that up because it will provide us a law enforcement presence out there. And as you know, we had a minor protest here yesterday. We do have some concerns for the Earth First activist group that is in the area. Does have somewhat of a reputation for sabotage and other damage-inducing activities. Third RAT team, third resource advisory team boat is now in the area. Team's been formed and should be fielded shortly. We have expended a considerable amount of effort in the through the Marine Safety Office in Anchorage to meet with fishermen and the contractors in the Homer and Kodiak sectors to get an understanding of the permitting process that we're going through to try to make a compromise between the certificated vessels requirement and prudent seamanship and safety requirements for a other than normal use of that vessel. I would like to bring emphasis to the need to treat our monitors on scene as the principal point of contact in the field. I really encourage all the agencies to come and contact the monitor on scene Normally, every segment in work has a monitor. Normally, there's an ADEC representative nearby or with them. And if we could work through them, I think we could avoid accumulating minor delays that eventually might add up. We are in a time-critical race here that we need to save everything we can. Do we need to make an administrative correction? NOAA is not operating an international shoreline cleanup committee. They are good, and they do have Canadians on it, but it is the Interagency Shoreline Committee, and I will defer to Madam Chairman momentarily. Visitors Bureau, as the visitors listed, we have an easy week coming up, but as you all know, we have lots of folks trooped through here. This is our attempt to try to keep you aware of who we're expecting that have been in contact with the Federal Center. And questions?
I expect the Commandant will be here in early August. Questions? Madam Chairman?
We've added two of the interagency committees to the operations report because we've actually had a lot of interest lately in who these committees are and what they do. Basically, the two, and there was a handout that came around separately, a single sheet, is a summary of essentially the charter that was set up establishing these two committees. They're both advisory to the Federal Unseen Coordinator, the Research and Development Committee and the Interagency Shoreline Cleanup Committee, otherwise known as the Shoreline Committee. I'm going to speak specifically to the ISCC, or the Shoreline Committee. It's primarily a committee that was set up as an advisory to the Federal On-Scene Coordinator to identify issues and make recommendations to the FOSC to expedite shoreline cleanup. What I'm going to do, because of the inquiries we had recently, is I'll briefly go through the five responsibilities that we were given, and then I'll use examples of the issues that have come up over the last week or so that fall under those different categories. And then from now on, when we give the reports, rather than going back through this, we'll just talk about the different issues and what category they're under. Originally, most of the work was done under 1 and 2, evaluating general shoreline cleanup procedures and plans and establishing priorities for cleanup. Basically, this involved all the committees which are identified down below under membership, who got together and tried to work out how we could best plan and assist the Coast Guard and Exxon in coming up with these issues. And it came down to primarily degree of oiling and to minimize further impact to sensitive resources and the procedure for doing this, the assessments and whatever, which are all covered in a shoreline treatment manual. That was the early stages. Now we've continued on with these issues. For instance, the establishing of priorities for cleanup. This is done by the input from the agencies onto sensitive environmental issues that we have to address, and some of those we referred to earlier, such as the fisheries. For instance, over the last 2 weeks, we have reviewed cleanup plans and operations that come in, both on a site-specific basis and in looking at the time that's left for the summer, and made recommendations in relationship to salmon streams, seal haul-out areas, the AFK hatcheries in Sawmill Bay, subsistence issues, fisheries such as the seine fishery, the set netters, and whatever. Other resources that we try to include in these discussions include recreational resources or the uses, and archaeological and cultural resources. So those are the areas that we normally address. Under number 3, reviewing and establishing acceptable cleanup practices, this is a constant revision that goes to the recommended and what we call treatments under evaluation that are contained in the treatment manual. And we just submitted a change 1, which looks at what we've learned in the field and how we might come up with better practices. And this has been submitted to the Coast Guard for approval. It will be going out soon, we hope. In general, then, we're constantly trying to take input from the field, both from the SCOT teams, from Exxon, and from the RAT teams, which are the resource assessment teams that are out there. Those comments and those groups come in frequently and actually brief and talk to the committee members. The time we spend, what we spend most of our effort on, though, is the recommendation and approval of shoreline cleanup plans. These are very site-specific, cleanup programs that are based upon the SCAT reports or the assessments that have been done by Exxon. They come in, the operations group then writes a plan based upon that assessment of how they plan to clean it up. And those, each one of those segments are site-specific plans, comes through the committee where all the different agencies look at it. And they look at it for a couple of, in a couple of ways. Does it fall within the guidelines that have already been established in the treatment manual? If not, is it something special that should be looked at? Sometimes a new method would be considered. Second, does it take into account the sensitive resources that are out there? And that's where the interagency committee comes in, very helpful, because we have up-to-date information on seal haul-out activity, where the eagle nests are, what the situation is on the rookeries, and all the other environmental sensitive issues which are addressed on each specific segment to minimize, again, the impact of, hopefully, of the treatment. These then take all that into consideration, changes are made and agreed upon with Exxon, and then forwarded to the Coast Guard for approval, and we go out in the field. The last area, evaluating effectiveness of cleanup operations, is actually handled in a couple of different ways. One is by site visits from the individual members on the committee. And when they're actually reviewing a shore cleanup program, they'll also go out and do some spot checks to verify environmental features that they need to know in order to make recommendations. The second way is we depend upon the resource assessment team boats. Those are the three boats that are out there that have Coast Guard, a biologist, usually a Forest Service or landowner type group, that, and other interested parties. There's a whole series of people that can be on those boats that move around from place to place and are sort of the eyes and ears of the resource agencies that are reviewing this. How effectively are the plans being carried out in the way they were designed? How effective do they appear to be? We get those comments back. But primarily they're there to offer modifications in the field that are necessary, to make recommendations for modifications. They have the authority to assist in making the treatment going on better at the time by working directly with the SCOT team out there.
And they're called rat boats?
Rat boats. We have a number of rats who visit us. And where we get our best feedback is these groups when they change over crews and they go out for 5 days. I heard one person's going out for 30. They come in and they'll spend time with the Shoreline Cleanup Committee actually discussing what they've seen, recommendations they've made, how they're interacting with the folks out there, how responsive Exxon is to some of the recommendations they made. And we consider this very valuable information and we use it. What I'm going to do now is, this is basically the format we do and the kinds of things that we do in the meetings and the recommendations that we made. We've picked a couple of topics where we think would be of general interest, and I'm going to ask individual members of the committee to come up and give a brief report. Leo Keeler from the U.S. Forest Service will be given a report on some booming recommendations related to recreational use in the area. It's one of the resources we have to consider. And another area that we've been spending a lot of time in the committee discussing is the possibility of establishing sites where we defer treatment of an oiled area in order to study how that area recovers and what happens to the oil in relationship to all the treatment that is going on. The ISCC is involved in this for two reasons. One is to agree to defer treatment would require a modification of the already approved treatment plan, so that would come through the ISCC. The second reason, though, that we're very interested in it is to provide information that we really need to do this number five, and that is to evaluate the effectiveness of the cleanup operations we have going on. We have heard a little bit earlier about the trade-offs that we're doing. No matter how we do the cleanup, we somehow inflict some additional damage, and we need to look at how effective the cleanup we're doing is compared to what we call a no treatment treatment. And second, what the recovery, how well does the biological community recover from that so that we can really determine the effectiveness of what we're doing in the Sound right now. And it's a process that is needed for making additional decisions. This, I'm gonna have Cal Sixtrom of the Exxon Environmental Group who's representing them anyway, who presented this proposal and explain it. And I would say that right now it is under review of the committee to determine whether or not we can recommend these sites.
Cal, idea in this was that we should do some evaluation to find out what kind of treatment we ought to follow in the future if Alaska has spills or anywhere else. And so we need to collect some good data as we go along. We ought to get something positive out of a spill like this. That might be one thing. Go ahead, Leo.
As Sharon mentioned, I'm just going to briefly summarize how we're approaching one of the topics as the shoreline group, and that being the topic of booming. I am approaching it from the Forest Service side with the interest of the recreationist that has been hindered by from use of some of the bay areas, with booming being across that, and starting to address the issue of how to determine how to protect the resources the boom was placed there for, where needed, and to determine the areas where booming is not needed and can be removed to allow the recreationists to come in. And from the information I've gathered so far, I understand there is a significant amount of boom that is north of Naked Island and Perry Island, all the way from the Cog Hill area up in through here in Fort Wells and around over towards Granite Bay. The booming was originally placed because no one knew where the flowing oil would move to, but a lot of that boom has not been revisited and removed. So we're trying to identify those areas and request that that boom be removed so the boaters have easier access into the bay. The other issue being the rest of the sound through Night Island, where there are large bays that may be closed off with booming as a protection measure when there's very little apparent risk of the area being re-oiled, and starting to work with the Fish and Game and the CDFU people on identifying what they see as the risks and what areas to open up the main bay and provide smaller boomed areas around the very specific stream areas or sensitive resources. So we'll be working on that as the Interagency Shoreline Committee, developing a recommendation to come to you and recommend that the Exxon key in to these areas kind of in this sequence to deal with all of the resources. Any questions?
Thank you, Leo.
Gail is the Exxon representative on the Interagency Shoreline Committee.
I do have a map.
It's on the other side. Okay, as Sharon said, there has been considerable discussion over the last week. I think we've discussed it at every meeting in the past week. And basically, last Friday, Exxon submitted an integrated description of their proposed study sites for all of Prince William Sound. And this map indicates 43 sites, and the different colored arrows indicate the types of studies that would be done on them. However, only 11 of these 43 sites, the ones that are marked in green, that may be difficult to see. But there are 11 sites, and on these sites, Exxon is asking for deferment of treatment on these sites so that we can conduct these scientific studies to look at the recovery of shorelines in treated and untreated areas, and to look at the biological recovery of organisms in these areas. The 11 sites comprise a distance of 1,400 meters, and that ranges from 100 meter segments to a maximum of a 300 meter segment. These sites have been chosen for the degree of oiling to represent, you know, a range of degree of oiling, a range of types of oil, and also to represent representative shoreline types, from rocky exposed areas to more sheltered coves, heavy and light oiling. Unfortunately, of these 11 sites, we recently lost one, which I consider a lost opportunity. As operations has said, they are moving very rapidly, and at the northwest end of Evans Island, in the Shelter Bay area, we unfortunately had to go through and clean one of those sites, simply because the logistics of moving our team around the point preclude us from going back very easily. It would cause a delay in our operation. So that is a lost opportunity, and we're sorry for that. And we're working through the committee and very hopeful that a recommendation can be obtained very shortly for approval of this program. We think it's a very valuable opportunity, and I think that we need to expedite it if we at all can. Are there any questions?
Didn't you have a site down at Latouche Island that was bypassed for treatment?
Yes, we had a site called LA-15 on the northeast end of Latouche Island, which was right here. And in order to meet the deadline for moving out of that area to protect the subsistence and fisheries in the Sawmill Bay area, we had to deploy our task force and move it out. And we requested a deferment of treatment on that site and were successful in moving our task force out, and that site was saved from any cleaning.
Just because the task force had to move anyway, right?
Well, no, we actually received a deferral. If the task force had sufficient time to stay there, they would have cleaned it without that deferral.
Yeah, this is a real shame that this is happening. I think, you know, we've had a lot of missed opportunities.
Yes, a site called EV-21 in just the last day or so in Shelter Bay has been cleaned. And the reason being, we just could not hold up the task forces in their work, and we cannot move away and commit to coming back to clean up those sites because of the difficulties in moving task forces. As they go through, we do not have permission to not clean those sites. And our task forces will clean them until we get permission to leave them set aside for this sort of study.
Steve, originally they had planned a number of other sites that we've gotten cleaned up, and they've already listed sites and signs and this sort of stuff, but it took a lot of work out of procedure for the review done and approval. So we lost sites up in my island and stuff that originally we were intended to do that kind of lessen the shoreline types of flooding and review again. That's one of the areas.
Well, is there any, what's the hold up on getting approval on the sites?
Approval on the site right now is based on the rest of the information from Exxon and the state of Alaska has said that they need to make a policy decision as to whether or not they can commit on site. We left the researchers expecting an answer from them tomorrow, I believe. That is needed in order for the landowner, one of the landowners from the Department of Natural Resources, to give us the land use permit, which is required to preserve the site and the study area. It's very involved.
So many permits required now.
Well, now maybe I, because I wasn't here or something early in the early part of the spill, but a lot of these sites and the fact that these were going on really came as a surprise to me. This wasn't common knowledge that they were out there even.
That's
not
true.
Yeah. And, you know, I think there's a proposal now before the ISCC 411.
We lost one.
Again, I guess I'm Maybe the procedure here or the whole mechanism is a fault, but I hope we're not pointing fingers here, because we certainly haven't been encouraging that these sites be cleaned up necessarily, that I'm aware of.
The IFCC, which everybody has represented here, what had happened, and just a little history on this. Originally, scientists tend to look at the research they're doing, and they go out and do it. I mean, I was in the academic community. And when I set up a study, I put up a sign that says, do not disturb, and I go ahead and do my studies. Well, this is what these contractors that were doing the research, collecting their data, did. And they went up and they put signs without notifying anybody, because academics don't understand a lot of the procedures that you have to go through, such as the land is owned by somebody else for one land. And specifically what brought this to a head was there was an anadromous fish stream on a site that had one of these study areas in it, and a sign, do not clean. The cleanup crew came there and they saw it and they honored it. They did not clean it without talking to anybody, because that's what the sign said. And consequently, at least this one stream did not get cleaned during the window of opportunity that was there. So we now have a resource which was threatened because of this confusion. So it was decided, and information attempted to disseminate out, that we would go ahead and clean areas until we could get the plans in. We made a recommendation that that not happen again, and that there be a review of these sites and a decision to be made. And that information went out, and it took a long time to the right people to get those plans put together. And that's where some of these sites got lost. And that's part of the process of dealing with a whole bunch of different people doing their own thing, and even though you're trying to coordinate it all. But the policy then was that these sites would be cleaned out, and that was a recommendation of the entire committee, not pointing fingers at anybody. And that was to try to prevent some of these other resources from being hacked. Then proposals were put in about a month ago from some of the Exxon people. Question was raised, well, we don't want to do this piecemeal. And we spent quite a bit of time trying to get the information from the other subcontractors to put a composite picture together. And that was, even though numerous requests were made, that data took a long time to come in. And so additional sites were jeopardized, and that was part of the process as well. What we're down to is these last sites. The information is in. Information that was supplied is good enough to make a decision. But while we were discussing this final technical review, and at the same time these researchers are having to go through the permitting process with the landowners, we have two parallel actions going. We're talking about three landowners in this case. We have U.S. Forest Service, Chugach National Forest, we have the Department of Natural Resources, and we have private property in some of these areas, which is the Chumega Village Corporation. And those are kind of involved. But in sitting down to these and to try to look at their scientific merit, the state then notified us of the fact that there was a policy decision from the state not to leave any heavily oiled beaches or from Alaska Fishing Game any oiled beaches untreated for any reason.
No, that's not.
Well, that's the way it was put to us. And
that's
so we asked them to go back and investigate that. And they were then evaluating, as I understand, there's been a concerted effort by the state to look at all these sites to try to evaluate their various methods, and as we were told, to then try to convince the state of Alaska that this would be a reason not to treat these sites. And what we need and what we're waiting for, and we were told we would get it tomorrow, would be a decision on that. But that, when he asked me what's stopping this or what's the thing that we have to get through next in order to go any further, that is the decision we need before we can go further with the landlords. We asked all the various agencies, and also they have approved the concept for bringing their concerns. And we're hoping to make a decision tomorrow, at least from a technical point of view, and then we still have to struggle with the landlord issues.
Well, some of the early proposals that we looked at were just for heavily oiled shoreline out there. And one of the proposals now is Point Helen. And it's a bleeder. There's oil that comes off that shoreline, and I think it's it would be against the department's philosophy in order to approve one of those sites for study. When you have oil coming off the shoreline, I think rather than studying that oil, they should put effort into removing the oil from that shoreline, keeping the oil from getting down to Prince William Sound. So we're not going to give back the approval for all those out there. think it'd be good probably to study lightly or moderately oiled shoreline, but maybe there's little or no chance of oil migrating off the site.
The problem with that is we need some heavily oiled in order to look at what the biological recovery would be. Again, the whole reason for evaluating this is in other spills, such as the Anacleta Easement, where we had heavy oiling of salt marshes and marshlands, except the National Troops in, and they cleaned those areas. And at the end of that study, I mean, it wasn't a study, at the end of that response, they didn't get to all the area. And they found out that the areas that were not cleaned, the areas that were left alone to recover naturally, recovered much more quickly than the ones that had been cleaned. The impact of the cleaning was worse. We don't have that kind of information up here for Prince William Sound type shorelines. We don't know. It's not quite as sensitive as the salt marsh, but at the same time, it's much more difficult to clean. And we're having to use stronger and stronger methods to do oil lock. And what we need is at least a few areas to compare how fast the oil degrades naturally, as well as the biological recovery in those areas, to evaluate if this were to ever happen again. Are there certain areas where we're doing the environment a greater favor by allowing nature to do it, or to prove that we're not? I mean, I don't know what the answer is. But if we don't leave some of these areas to follow through,
and I think the letter that we sent out established our position on that said that if a study was submitted to us that would detail what they were planning to do and their objectives, that we would consider leaving the heavy oil beach. And until recently, in most cases, we didn't even know these were established. The first ones that came in were just for beach segments, period. Then we found out all these studies were going on out there already. And now they're starting to come in with some data to justify or provide information so we can figure out what they're using.
The only point I want to make is that because of the cleanup operation and the requirement or the need or whatever, the preference that in order to leave these sites, if we haven't made a decision and we might have the site right now, the Exxon's got to come back and clean it, it interferes with it, does cleanup operations. But all I'm saying is we need to move together and make a decision as soon as possible.
I would agree. You know, it's awfully easy to get a no answer around here. Ask any question. Even if it's good, you'll get a no answer. So let's move ahead with it. I think those things need to be done. If we have a beach that's bleeding, put some boom on it and stop it. But let's get these things moving. We owe it to society. We owe it to Alaska. We owe it to ourselves so that the next time we have a spill, we know what the heck we're doing.
We just put something in perspective. R&D committee in May started asking for all the set-aside sites. ISCC, the RAC Shoreline Committee, sent to the FOSC a memo dated June 16th listing specifically every single item we needed to consider any set-aside. And the bottom line said, until this information is sent to us and we can consider this, clean it. Do not stop and do it. This has now been 6 weeks and we just got the final package of these 2 days ago. And they're still not complete. So we have to put this in perspective. Nobody has been holding people up. That has been going on for 6 weeks now. And that's what I think happened. We have to keep the time span on here. This is something that occurred within the last couple, 3 days.
Okay, if you're trying to blame me, I'll take the blame. I don't care who's to blame. Let's get it fixed.
Right, hey? I think it is, and we are right now. We've gone out from DEC, ADF&G, EPA. We looked at all of these sites. We had meetings the last 2 days, and I feel we'd be able to come up with some kind of a decision on it tomorrow at the meeting. We just have to get by a couple more hands together.
Great.
What I'm saying is what it's sounding, and I'm sick of everybody here talking about it. We have to look at the fact there's been 6 to 8 weeks people have, and I don't think we're just talking about scientists, we're talking about organized groups of people, and they have not gotten the information into the committee so we could act on it. And that's why these have been cleaned or treated today, sir.
Yes. Watch your language. That's the dirty C word.
I have a Polish one.
Thanks. I think we've cleared the air on that very well. And I, not cleaned, cleared. Okay.
Anything else?
No, I was just going to say, I think that we have the full package together. We started, originally this process started back in mid-June where we submitted initial documents on various proposals. On last Friday, we did submit a package which was probably about 90% complete. And we now have what I think is a complete package in which we can make a technical recommendation on whether to go ahead with this or not. And then the policy recommendations will have to follow very quickly after that, that technical recommendation in order for us to save these opportunities. Thank you.
It's really a bit of a conundrum to find that you're trying to keep from washing some beaches. But I think we ought to try. Who have I missed now? Jeannie, do you have nothing? You can't top that? Anybody else? What have I missed? I see eyeballs over there rolling around. What have I missed, Jackie?
I think the RV committee is declared a thorough discussion. And at this late hour, I might recommend that we not raise that issue.
Okay. Anybody else? Yes, sir. Great. Bioremediation. Love to hear it. That was a very good presentation you made today. That was, you know, even I understood it, and I really am not a scientist or anything close to it. That was very well done.
I'm not going to keep you here for that length of time. Many of you already know what's going on. We are set up in Snug Harbor with several test plots out there where we're testing the effectiveness of different nutrient applications. The design in our study is to try and demonstrate that the addition of nitrogen and phosphorus to the microbial communities on the beaches will enhance the biodegradation that's going on at these sites. As we've stated before, we're finding that biodegradation in itself is occurring at a very rapid rate out there without any tampering from man. If you compare our control untreated sites with the treated sites right now, they're all seem to be going along at about the same rate. This is very encouraging from our standpoint because as bacteria are degrading oil, they're going to require nitrogen and phosphorus, and if we can get some more in there, we may very well be able to, over a long period of time, see some significant further degradation of the oil. The Snug Harbor operation is now in its sixth week. We're really beginning to get in the major piece of data at this point in time so that we're going to begin to evaluate the total effectiveness of what's happened out there. Many of you are aware of the fact that we sprayed a fertilizer called an oleophilic material. This is a fertilizer that's designed to have an affinity for the oil, designed to hold nitrogen and phosphorus at the oil-water interface where bacteria can take the maximum advantage of that. We had a surprising event in the sense that a cobble beach we sprayed, basically the oil on the stone surfaces seemed to clear up almost completely. If you fly over that area, as many of you probably have, you'll see a very nice white rectangle on a contaminated beach. The indications are to date that this is involved to a large extent with biodegradation, and we're continuing to follow it, and we hope it'll indicate a possible way in which the microorganisms can help things out. We also have an ecological monitoring program that's been established with this effort in Snug Harbor, and to date our information would suggest that there's no adverse effects occurring either from the stimulation of algal growth, eutrophication by the addition of the nutrients on the beach, and there doesn't seem to be any toxic effect that's resulted from adding these fertilizers to the beach areas. We're now at a point where we're going to move into a second test area. This is on the eastern side of Knight Island, up at a passage point. One of the original ideas we had for the bioremediation process was that we would follow up the physical cleaning operation, physical treatment operation, with the bioremediation. The idea was that it's much more efficient from our standpoint to get the big globs of oil out of there first and then follow that up with the bacteria. Bacteria will degrade the oil whether there's a glob there or not, but the time it takes is much more significant if they have to work from the surface down through some of these globs. So the more big oil masses we can remove before you go in and try and stimulate the biodegradation, the better. So this site that we've picked up in on Knight Island is a treated area, and we're going to go out there and basically apply the fertilizers in much the same way as we have done in Slug Harbor. We will use a significantly larger amount of shoreline, and this will act as a backup for any operations that might be approved on a larger scale for the use of this particular technology. Our basic idea is that we will get some definitive information on what the contamination extent of the oil is on the beach before we start, and then follow that on over time. Hopefully be able to follow that as well some of the time during the winter, and then come back in spring and see exactly how successful this is. Just want to remind everybody that we're talking about a slow process here. It's not the panacea that has been portrayed in some areas. We don't expect to go out and add these fertilizers and in 10 days see all the beaches looking lily white. That's not the way it works. There are fractions of oil that are much more difficult to degrade than others, primarily the asphaltene areas. These are very slow to degrade. The basic problem is the availability to the bacteria. But what's going to happen, we feel, is that as the degradable components in the oil are consumed, the oil will become less and less biologically available. And that will mean instead of having a sticky black material on there, you'll have a non-sticky, relatively hard asphaltene type of material that will be relatively inert. What we think is going to happen through the addition of the nutrients is we'll stimulate the natural weathering process, which will get the oil to that asphaltene state anyway. But we're going to try and get to that in a little bit sooner time, and therefore help protect the environment just that much more. So I'd be glad to answer any questions rather than
questions.
Since strictly a cancer bacteria already out there.
That's right. Setup question. part of our interest in the very beginning was to consider the aspect, in addition to trying to stimulate the natural flora, but was to also consider the use of introduced organisms. And introduced in this case means that we would basically enrich for bacteria from Prince William Sound in some sort of a fermenter or a cultivation apparatus, and then add the microorganisms back into the environment. The idea is that you can increase the microbial biomass and therefore increase the degradation rate. At this point in time, we're beginning to initiate experiments to try and see what kinds of cultures we can create in the laboratory using inocula from Prince William Sound. And depending on the progress in those experiments, we might even consider going to a small plot and adding these organisms and seeing whether that has any effect. But we won't get to that in any big scale at all this summer.
Well,
we'll
come several.
Yes?
I'd like to just let folks know what we're doing. We're here with Pat. We were working with the EPA on this project for the last few months, and we're very encouraged by what we see. From our standpoint, based on the results to date, we think that the bioremediation is perhaps the least threatening technology that we can use to try and clean up the impacted oil areas. So we're very encouraged by what we see. And to the extent that we have already pre-ordered some material from the manufacturer in France, there's only one manufacturer in the world that makes this material. So we had to take some risk and pre-order, and the material is going to start arriving next week. As soon as we get the recommendation from the EPA, which I understand is soon, right, Hap? We are going to be going forward through the review process, and hopefully we will be able to get through the review process in a reasonable amount of time so that we're ready to start applying the material just as soon as possible. We have a very narrow window in order to take advantage of what the EPA has seen in this test. We need to have sunlight and temperature, and we need to have the time to get this on the shoreline. It's not a matter of going out with a helicopter and spraying it on in a day. It's going to take a lot of manpower to put this on. We are designing and fabricating equipment, so we're positioning ourselves to go ahead with this technology, but we're also counting on a speedy review process.
Thank you. I understand that that Commissioner Kelso endorsed the concept today publicly, and I think it's a good concept, and I certainly endorse it. I think you're absolutely right. If there's some place that we can use such a method, we really owe it to ourselves to use it. Delighted if we can move that quickly. Any other comments, questions? Thank you very much.
What you've been listening to this evening has been the briefing of the Federal On-Scene Coordinator, Rear Admiral Clive Robbins. I would apologize a little bit for some of the buzz that we had from our transmitter. We're working to see if we can clean it up in some way, but as I told you before we started, this is a very informal group, and they haven't had microphones here before, so I'm going to have to train them to always speak into the microphone so that you'll be able to understand what they say. There's a lot of important information being passed back and forth, and I think quite interesting, too, for everybody who lives in the sound. Thank you very much for joining us. It's shortly after 9 o'clock, it looks like. This is KCHU. Valdez Cordova, broadcasting live from the Exxon Command Center. I think that's a chiropractor's building. I'm Sue Rapley. Have a pleasant evening. Join us next Tuesday when we do this again.